Eric Francis Fridays, the one and only, joining us now on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Sir, where do we find you on this gloomy Friday?
Up at Sylvan Lake, and it's gloomy here as well, so, you know, not much better than Calgary as far as I understand, but that's okay. They'll have some summer left. We just need the weather gods to prove it.
I believe the recipe is a couple fingers of rum over a few ice cubes and throw a few pieces of lumber on the old fireplace. There's the move.
Well, I do have a fire going, and it's so good that you mentioned that because it is National Rum Day today.
Come on. Is it actually?
It actually is National Rum Day. And as a man who's a one-trick pony, rum is my thing. I do plan on celebrating National Rum Day.
I would be offended if I was in the rum industry and you did not. Just stating your passion for it. One-trick pony, that's strong. Like, you won't even have a beer, you don't do mixed drinks, or it's just your go-to is rum?
It's just my go-to. I mean, I drink some other stuff, but I my go-to is always rum and Coke. And over the years, I've tried to find other things that I like, but nothing is like the nectar of the gods. Rum with a little bit of Coke in there.
What's Brad Treliving drinking to deal with the Yusuf Alamaki injury? This is a tough blow, and not one that technically affects their top four, but a guy that I think everyone in the organization had massive expectations for this season in terms of a jump, and a guy that could supplant a top four defenseman maybe even by mid-year.
Yeah, and, you know, it's all about development for him. I think we all agree the sky's so high for him, and eventually, you know, I don't think it's crazy for people to talk about how one day he'll take Mark Giordano's spot as the top defenseman on this team. I don't think that's crazy at all. I think that's certainly the plan. But it's going to be, you know, that ascension up the ranks is going to take a little longer now. The poor guy with the high ankle sprain last year, which is incredibly painful and tough to come back from. And then now this, the ACL. And talking to Brad Treliving and just this, Valimaki was just so distraught. I mean, it's just got to be so devastating. You put so much hard work in the off season, and that's your payoff. It's just got to be devastating. So, what's interesting about it is the repercussions. It's obviously they're going to have to go out and get another body to kind of compete as that seventh, eighth guy, whatever the case may be, and that costs you additional money. You get cap relief, obviously, from the injury, but you still need to spend real dollars on another body, which you weren't planning on doing. And in the midst of, you know, the middle of August, the dregs out there, it's not all that attractive. There's guys available for a reason. And that's, yeah. You know, actually one of the names of the guys out there that I'm interested in is Schlemko. I thought he was good when he was in Calgary. And I don't know what you thought of him as a player or if you saw much of him when he was here. But I thought he was a serviceable, you know, third pairing defenseman. And I wouldn't mind seeing him come back to Calgary. But either way, the big thing to me when that happened was, you know, that's clear now that they can't trade TJ Brody. I mean, I guess you could go out there and try and find a deal, you know, where you get another defenseman in return, but that doesn't really, it's not exactly what the Calgary Flames are looking for. I mean, they've been shopping TJ Brody. He was the obvious answer, deal from a position of strength to address your number one weakness, which is cap space. And now, they can't do that because they need Brody as a veteran. You know, they got three youngsters and three veterans amongst their blue line. And I don't think you want to trade Brody and then have four youngsters and two veterans. It's just too scary a proposition in a league where I think defense is the most important position outside of goaltending. So it means Brody's not going to be traded. Some people will be devastated at that news. I know that in Calgary. I think it's good news for the organization because I still think he's a really good defenseman. I know he's prone to some major gaffes, but well, let me ask you, where are you on TJ Brody? Like, you know, he's the number one whipping boy amongst this fan base. Is that warranted in your eyes, or do you think he's still a major asset for this team?
Well, I think it was clear that by the end of the season, Rasmus Anderson had proven to be a better top pair option. But that doesn't mean that that's all on TJ. I think most of that is on Rasmus Anderson's development. I've just been baffled that it hasn't happened. Like, it's not like TJ Brody is only going to become available in August. This is a guy I think they were trying to move at the draft.
Yeah.
And so when we got this far into the offseason, even before the Valimaki injury, like let's say, you know, calendar turns to August, him not being moved tells me the market isn't where the GM wants it. That him shopping TJ Brody, he's not getting the type of responses he wants in terms of, oh, we'll give you this, we'll give you that. So I was kind of resigned to the fact that TJ Brody was going to start the season with this club anyway, because in the GM's mind, if there was value, it'd be done. He could have used the cap space months ago. It's not like you need the cap space mid-August. You would have loved it heading into the draft even to get more assets there in theory, or July 1. You know, before you buy out Michael Stone, which may or may not have been necessary. I think this is a deal that they've been trying to do for a while, but that I think they were resigned to the fact it wasn't going to happen until you got to camp, someone got injured, or until you could build his value back up in season in a smaller role. But I'll say this, like, he's played top 4 minutes the bulk of his career, and he doesn't seem to be treated with the respect of a top four defenseman on a team that won the Western Conference in the regular season last year. So I don't know. My thought was, they're going to try to find a way to make it work without moving TJ, because if the market was there, he'd already be gone. Secondly, Schlemko, I really liked when he was here. My question would be to the people that have watched him, what's happened to him since then? He's now 32. He only played 18 games last year. Where's his game at? If he could be the Schlemko that was in Calgary a few years ago, it's a slam dunk, no-brainer, get him in, and it wouldn't cost you a ton of money, because otherwise he wouldn't be available on August 16th. I just wonder what Father Time's done since he left the Flames and had that heroic shootout win in Boston, if you recall.
Yeah, I do remember that. Now, a couple of things more on Brody, you know, in terms of the marketplace. They did have a trade, of course, we all remember.
Yeah, the Kadri one, that's right.
You know, Nazem Kadri for TJ Brody, and it was a trade that I had spoken of on this very radio station about a month prior, just saying that just seemed to me to make so much sense. Toronto wanted to get rid of Kadri because of his playoff antics and some other reasons. And, you know, Calgary was dealing from a position of strength on the blue line. They made about the same amount of money, pretty much. And I thought a one-for-one swap would make sense. But adding to your concern about his value, that deal, if it is exactly how we all are led to believe, it was also the Flames also had to throw in Mark Jankowski.
And I think what Connor Brown came back. That was the other part.
Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't going to be just one for one. There was going to be some throw-ins there, you know, third line guys. But either way, the other thing is that, you know, Brody's partner last year, and I'm not trying to say that, doesn't Brody deserve a little bit of credit for Mark Giordano winning the Norris? And they're going to be people go, oh my God, are you crazy? But you don't win the Norris with a weak partner. You win the Norris with a guy who you can work really well with, be comfortable to join the Russian, know that the guy's going to cover you. I'm not saying they deserve it. Just trying to build the argument again for Brody, which I've constantly tried to do. You know, the guy played with the guy who won the Norris Trophy last year, so he couldn't have been that bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a little bit puzzling, the lack of a market, at least from the outside looking in. Okay, so let's walk further through the ripple effect of the Valimaki injury. So he was going to be on the left side of a third pair that would have had Rasmus Anderson or TJ Brody on the right, or if TJ was gone, okay, now we're looking at maybe they kept a Michael Stone who'd play the right side, or maybe you have Shillington and Valimaki, one of them has to play their offside, maybe Brandon Davidson's the guy, but he's a lefty as well. What are they looking for now, and what does this injury do to the rest of the blue line? Because we know that the five guys that they have that all played last year, plus Shillington.
Yeah, it looks like Shillington's the obvious fill-in. And, you know, he played quite well last year. He's about 12 minutes a night. You know, not the rave reviews that we all had for Rasmus Anderson, of course, in a similar situation. But I thought Shillington looked like he had proven that. I think he had proven last year that he was an everyday NHLer.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that's the big blow. The big blow is what happens when, not if, when a defenseman gets injured, because it happens a lot in the NHL, obviously. You know, is it Brandon Davidson? Is it Valiev? Is it, you know, the options are kind of scary, I think, for a lot of people, because they're unknown quantities. They're not exactly hotshot youngsters that are trying to knock on the door. These are guys who are kind of also-rans, and, you know, they're looking for a defenseman right now, I think, that who's going to get make $700,000 a year and is going to sign a one-year deal and is going to, you know, be the seventh or eighth defenseman in this organization. I think that's pretty clear that that's all they're looking for right now. That's pretty much all that's out there. Now, if they go out and make a trade, which could also satisfy a couple other issues, which is shaving some salary and land a defenseman, I think that would be maybe even preferable for the team. But at this point in time, you know, the good news for Flames fans is that the bulk of the season last year, the guys who carried the mail for this team at the blue line are back.
Yep.
And this is a team that won the Western Conference last year, despite a goaltending tandem that finished 21st in the league in save percentage. So the defense in front of them are obviously pretty stellar. And, another luxury this team has is a second pairing that's carved in stone. And that's, you know, Hanifin and Travis Hamonic. And I laughed all year long when I saw, you know, Western reporters, Eastern reporters and, you know, national reporters talking about how they maybe look at a trade one of those two guys. That is absolute nonsense. There's zero chance that this team would be looking to trade Hanifin with the youth and the upside there and the deal he's signed to. And Hamonic is a guy who, you know, I think every team in the league would love to have a guy like that with the character and just the best teammate you could ever ask for. And there's no chance that they're not going to try and sign him beyond this year. And so the one thing some friends of mine said is, oh my God, when they found out about the injury here to Valimaki, they said, oh my God, that's brutal timing. We just bought out Michael Stone. The team must be so, you know, regretting that. Now, I'm a Stone supporter. I don't think it was really warranted for him to be ranked eighth by this coach by the end of the season on their depth charts. But I think he's a very serviceable guy, and I think that they would sign him in a heartbeat if they could for $700,000, have him playing for that.
Yeah.
Problem was he was making $3.5 million. So you couldn't do that. It's not like if this injury happened beforehand, they still weren't going to buy out Michael Stone. They still had to buy out Michael Stone, even though they could use a player of exactly his ilk, in my opinion, moving forward.
Yeah, if you can't move TJ Brody, you got to buy out Michael Stone, right? Or if you can't move Michael Furley, because those were the moves that were going to give you that $4 million in cap space. If those things aren't happening because the market's not there, you got to look at other ways to create cap space. And it just stuck out like a sore thumb. A guy that couldn't crack the regular lineup when he was healthy can't be making $3.5 million. Let's go back in time. This feels like cherry picking in a way, but also it was a move that I never really understood. Wouldn't Brett Kulak be a great guy to still have in the organization right now?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. But I'll tell you what. I don't know if – I think it's interesting the nuances of how the Kulak thing ended.
Let's walk through that. Yeah. So this is what I wanted to ask you because I think it's obvious to state, oh, here's a guy that, you know, started in the A last year in Montreal and was playing top four by the end of the year on a Montreal club that pushed hard for a playoff spot. But – where did it all fall apart between Brett Kulak and the Calgary Flames? Because he's a young guy, skates pretty well, moved the puck okay. I didn't know. I thought like these are the types of assets you try to hold on to. And it wasn't like he went into arbitration and asked for $5 million. Like we're talking about something close to, you know, league minimum, below league average.
But the point is, he did go to arbitration, and that is a no-no in today's NHL. I remember you and I had this conversation way back when, or I don't know, it was about a month ago, and started throwing around the stats. The last 5 years, guys who've gone to arbitration, something like 70% of them are no longer with the team that they went to arbitration with 2 years later. It just causes a rift. And I think, I really do believe that GMs around the league, and I think this, you know, I think this is exactly what happened with Tree Living. You went to the arbitration with us, you're dead to us. You're gone. I think that GMs around the league want to send the message that if you're going to do that, if you're going to take it all the way to arbitration, put us through this whole process, and you're not willing to bend at the last second, come up with something that we all agree is something we can all live with, then you're going to be blackballed. Blackballed is a strong word. I guess that's not the right word at all, but I think that GMs want to send the message that you can't do that. You just can't do that. You're not playing ball. Brett Kulak hadn't earned the right to go to arbitration. I guess he had by the letter of the law, but really, do you think that guy should have been going to arbitration? Do you think he'd proved enough in the NHL that he should be going there? He got 1 year in the NHL and he decided to do that. And I just think that that was, a crucial mistake by Kulak. Now, hey, it's all worked out for him. He's in Montreal. He's playing top 4 minutes. Good for him. He went to a team that really needed him more so than Calgary. And maybe that at the end of the day, that's exactly what Kulak was hoping for, to get out of the organization. But I guess the point of my whole thing is, I think it left a bad taste in the mouth of this team, and I think that's why it got swapped. Do you agree?
Well, he got awarded $900,000, and you can like or not like him going to ARB, but what in the world is wrong with a guy that can play third pairing for $900,000? Like, I understand that the Flames clearly reacted strongly to it, but isn't asset management more important than your feelings?
Sure, but I'm glad that you agree that was why I think he was ultimately let go.
Well, I think it absolutely is the reason why, because there's no other explanation. He was a serviceable NHLer that they gave up for guys that are going to play in the AHL, and that's it. Might not get a single game played from the other two guys they got in trade in the NHL.
Yeah, and to be fair also, I mean, I don't think it was just hurt feeling. I think it's important for these GMs. I think they see it as important to send messages. I'll go back way back to when Mike Camilleri was about to become a UFA, and the Flames knew that they weren't going to keep him after that. And Brian Burke didn't trade him at the trade deadline. We all remember that, I think. And it was just nonsensical that you would just let a guy go and let his contract expire and not try to get an asset for it. But Brian Burke spoke several times about it. I had many conversations with about it. It's important to send a message that you're not going to reduce your price tag, and that, you know, people need to know that the next time that you go to the trade deadline, other teams aren't going to say, wow, Calgary will cave at the last second and we'll be able to get this guy cheaper. So I think message sending, we talk about it a lot on the ice by players and organizations. I think it happens a lot off the ice too. And I think that, you know, arbitration is one of those situations where organizations will then send a message that that's not acceptable in their eyes. So I agree. 900 wasn't egregious, but the other point to it is they also saw in their pipeline that they had guys that they thought were coming along and would be good defensemen,
yep,
you know, to step in. So I think it was, they had a lot of good defensemen. They decided he was one that was expendable and you could send a message at the same time. So that's where I think it was.
Yeah. I never understood the Berkey one. Like you got Johnny Gaudreau in the fourth round. You wouldn't take a couple lottery tickets and see if you could hit another, not that it's going to happen every time, but why not collect the lottery tickets? And secondly, like, we knew Berkey was going to find the next GM. What the heck does his deal at the deadline have to do with the next GM's reputation? You know?
Yeah, but he said it was an organizational reputation.
Well, I just don't get that, though, right? Like, it's like if you fire Paul Fenton in Minnesota, the next guy coming in doesn't answer the phone and have to pay Paul Fenton prices. I just don't buy that.
Yeah, it was a very interesting. I'd never thought of it in a million years. And when he said it, I went, huh, interesting. I still think at the end of the day he made a mistake because an asset was there for the taking. And I can't remember what it was. I think he wanted a second rounder for Camilleri.
Something like that, yeah. And it was a late developing market, if I remember. So it sounded to me like a guy that needed an excuse when all of a sudden it was 2 minutes before the deadline and some of the big names haven't moved, so the teams hadn't got down to Camilleri on their list yet. It was super late, and maybe they tried and it didn't go through, but are you really going to say, hey, I screwed up as a GM, I ran out of time? It's probably more convenient to talk about message sending.
Fair enough. I just thought it was an interesting tack, and I think there is some truth to it maybe in the eyes of some GMs, but you're right. He was not long for the GM chair. He knew he was moving on. It was an interesting one. Anyway, the Berkey situation is always different than most GMs, right? Because he's always been different than almost every other GM.
So who are they looking for? Like an Oscar Fantenberg type? Is that sort of the guy that you'd say that type of player will help the Flames in their search for a defenseman right now?
Yeah, the irony being that I think they'd love to have Oscar Fantenberg back. I think they'd love to have, I don't know if they'd want Dalton Prout back, but I still think, you know, with their desire to still get more grit in their lineup, I think he was a guy, although I don't think he was interested in being a gritty defenseman anymore. I think he was more interested in trying to prove that he could still play. And I think, you know, maybe he'll get that chance in his new team. But I think that those are exactly the guys. And, you know, you look at the list of guys who they lost in the offseason this year with either by a buyout or they went on to other places as UFAs, Fantenberg, Prout, and Stone. I think he'd take any one of those guys in a heartbeat right now to fill in for that number seven spot. And again, I know the coach wasn't big on Michael Stone, and I know the GM wasn't big on the contract that he had signed him to. but serviceable at number seven, and they knew what he was all about. I just really hope for Stone. I'm hoping he's going to get another chance somewhere else, because that those the health issues he had last year are pretty scary, and I think a lot of teams are going to be reticent to try and give him another shot. I hope I'm wrong, but I fear that I'm right.
Anything else Flames-wise that you want to hit? Clearly all these RFAs, none of them are going to get done in the near term. It sounds like everyone is waiting for the Marner domino to follow for the hope that there's a new market precedent set. Just like when Dreisaitl got 8.5, a summer after Johnny Gaudreau, who had much better numbers, got 6.75, that there'll be a new bar for RFAs. And if you're not Marner's agent, but you're an agent for one of the other guys, why in the world would you sign before he does?
Totally agree. Yeah, we've had that conversation so many times this summer, and nothing's changed there. But, you know, you asked for further thoughts on the Flames. I'll say this. You know, the Valimaki injury and the inability now to trade Brody, I mean, it was an inability, you know, apparently beforehand, but now I don't think you want to trade Brody. I think it just puts so much pressure now on this GM to go out and trade Michael Frolik. And that's not to say that if the season starts and they still have Frolik in the lineup that they're unhappy with it. I mean, the guy is so serviceable and so versatile, and he's the total pro. Even if you add him on a third line, which it looks like is where the coach really wants to put him, I think that's a damn good third liner. It's expensive third liner, but there's so much pressure, I think, right now on Treliving to try and trade him, because he's the most logical guy left for, you know, a cap hit of what,
4.3.
Yeah. Jeez. I mean, there you go. I mean, that's, you'd love to be able to shed that sort of salary, Matthew Tkachuk or not.
They can't start the season with him and Tkachuk. Like, you, unless you move two or three other bodies, like, there's no way they can not trade anyone and have Tkachuk and start the season. Like, you've got to clear out space before you can sign Tkachuk, unless you're going on a real short bridge, which I would think the agent and the player are not interested at this point in negotiations.
Yeah, I don't. At this point, that's a key part of your sentence there. I still think at the end of the day, that might be how this gets resolved. But, and I don't agree with you saying that, you know, it's, you can't have Frolik and Tkachuk. I mean, I think there, I just think it's obviously the most desirable outcome that you get rid of Frolik to keep Tkachuk. Obviously, they're going to keep Tkachuk, but I think they're going to end up with both, to be honest.
So they got to move someone else then, right? You need that space.
That's exactly it. And, you know, a name that I keep, and I know this is not going to be popular with Flames fans if this comes to fruition, but, you know, Jankowski, and he's not making a ton of money, but, you know, that might be a guy who is, because I think he would have a pretty good market out there for him. And if you're looking to scrimp and save $1 million here, $1 million there, Jankowski might be the odd man out. I don't know. Zarnik's another name you and I spoke of. That would be an obvious one if you could get rid of him. But again, that's only a, what, 1.5, I think.
1.25, yeah.
1.25. So, I mean, it's nickel and diamond at this point in time. But if you can't get rid of Frolik, they're going to have to nickel and diamond or send a significant player down to the minors. And that's not something they want to do either.
Yeah, and I don't see any logical candidates for that.
No.
Yeah, I'm with you on Jankowski. Because I think there's a lot of teams would look at him and see a lot of upside, and I think there probably is still some upside there. He clearly carved out a role on a penalty kill last year with this club. But from a Flames perspective, he was outplayed by Derek Ryan. That's great news, because you brought in Derek Ryan, who was an older guy. You wondered what he was going to get. He had very limited NHL track record before, what, a season and a half under Bill Peters in Carolina. But he was great. He was their best and most consistent center for the final 2 months of the season. So if Derek Ryan is your number three center, Jankowski, I guess, is a little more expendable. If Dylan Dubé can play a number four center, I'd think.
Yeah, and if you want to really start looking deep into that, Elias Lindholm can play center too, right? So then you could shuffle some guys down. I mean, I still don't know how you'd ever put Monahan as a third-line center, but if you ever wanted to toy with it, you got a couple centers that are right there ready to take that job over. And again, I spoke to Sam Bennett 3-4 weeks ago, and he still practices faceoffs. I think he still thinks that one day he's going to get another crack at center. And, that's a discussion for another day. But the point is, he could do it if they were pressed into having to do that. So he may be the most expendable guy on the, on the forward roster for the Calgary Flames right now. And I know people don't like hearing that because he's young and there's an upside, and they were so patient with him for so many years. He's got size. but he's a gentle giant too, right? This team's looking to add more grit. They want more gristle in that lineup, and he doesn't really provide it. He brings so many other things. Like, I think he's a tremendous asset. And at that price tag, I think there's lots of teams that would jump all over him. Mark Jankowski, you'd hate to see this team have to get rid of him just because they really do need every dime that he makes. And what does he make? I think it's
1.6. Yeah, 1.65.
Yeah, 1.6. So, yeah, it's not a lot to get rid of, but tremendous value for him for sure.
Hey, good chatting. Enjoy the rum tonight, would you?
Enjoy National Rum Day. Make sure you celebrate it accordingly.
I will. Thank you, Francis.
Cheers, buddy.